On today's episode of The Good Word, James Edwards from The Athletic joins me to discuss everything Knicks, from their coaching search that landed them Mike Brown to where they sit in the Eastern Conference and who are the biggest threats. We also talk about DeAndre Ayton's fit in Los Angeles, the big three-way trade with the Clippers, Jazz, and Miami Heat, and we talk about Chris Paul's legacy that he has 1 year left before he retires. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget, rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. It is getting close to the dog days of the summer, so no better person to bring on during the dog days of summer, my man James Edwards from The Athletic. James, hope you enjoyed your 4th of July because you are back in the mess. How you doing, bro?
Dog days is a term that I used to look forward to, but I haven't even been able to take time off with the Knicks coaching search. Now we're going into summer league. So right after summer league, I'm going to take some time off. I just attract coaching searches.
You do.
I've been covering the NBA. I either just finished my 8th or 7th season, and I've covered, I've done 4 coaching searches. So every other year on average. Or front office. There's something every summer. Every summer there's something. It's unreal.
So what you're telling me is that next summer, either Leon Rose or Mike Brown is going to be gone.
I mean, listen, when you set the bar as get to the finals, it's somebody's going to have to pay if that doesn't happen.
I mean, look, I was trying to be funny, but let's legit start there, because you and especially you guys at The Athletic have been on top of this Knicks coaching search thing from the moment that they fired Tibbs. Like, not to toot our own horns here, but me and you were kind of the only people out here telling y'all that, hey, man, James Dolan ordered the code red.
Yeah.
Pat yourself on the back for that.
But no, yeah, you too.
But seriously, Mike Brown comes in as a 2-time coach of the year, but also a guy who has not stayed long in any place since maybe his first stint in Cleveland. Like, he spent one season and 5 games in L.A., another one season stint in Cleveland with Kyrie, and then 2 seasons in, 30-something games in Sacramento. Like, that's not a long track record. And you're going into the New York Knicks, you know, sort of cauldron, so to speak, where only the finals will do. Like, how do you think, what do you put out this? What do you think attracted Mike Brown to the Knicks? And what do you think, how do you think this is going to play?
I think there are a few things. One, the ability, not many coaches, let alone black coaches, get an opportunity to take over a team that just made the Eastern Conference Finals. We've talked about that a ton with coaches that I've covered, that you've been around. We've had those conversations with those guys and how those jobs just don't come about, right? Like, Dwayne Casey went from coach of the year in Toronto to having to, the next job he had was Detroit, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Mike Brown sees an opportunity there to rewrite his history, change his narrative and all those things. Obviously there's good players here, right? Like Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns, OG Anunoby, Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges. There's good players here. And also, you just don't know when these opportunities arise again. As you mentioned, Vinny, he hasn't stayed long at a lot of places. Experience was big for the Knicks when they were going for this next head coach. And Mike Brown has been to the finals. He's been fired a year after a year. He's been fired halfway through a season. He's won 2-time coach of the year. He's seen it all. You just don't know when you get these opportunities again. So I think if you're him, it's like, all right, well, worst come to worst, it doesn't work out, and I got one big paycheck. If it works out, I'm the guy who ended this drought in New York, right? It's pretty much a win-win for him. So I could understand why he would want it, but I also understand why somebody like Taylor Jenkins, I know I talked about this, and even Stephen Bondi at the New York Post mentioned it, like, didn't seem ton of enthusiasm from someone like Taylor Jenkins, but he's barely 40, if 40.
Right.
He'll have other opportunities.
Young. Right.
So I think that's why I think if you're Mike Brown, it's like, all right, how many more opportunities are going to come back around?
Like for me, I'm with you. The fact that maybe he doesn't have the same gravitas as a Tom Thibodeau. You walk into a building, you know he's there and all that other type of stuff. But clearly that didn't work for Tibbs, as accomplished as it was. So that didn't really help. The thing that gets me, and it's not that Mike Brown is a bad hire, good hire. I think he's a good hire. But in New York, you know that there's a certain legacy media who will forever back the Jeff Van Gundys, the Mark Jacksons, like those type of names. Mm-hmm. The first three-game losing streak. When I tell you, James, the first three-game losing streak, those people would come up, well, Mark Jackson wouldn't be here, Jeff Van Gundy would. And I wonder how Mike Brown will be able to handle instances like that. You know what I mean?
No, that's fair. And I think, too, another thing that I'm not sure if people outside of New York or New York fan base know this, like the coach is the spokesperson.
Mm-hmm.
The front office doesn't talk, the owner doesn't talk. So if things go sour, there's only one person up there to handle those questions. If somebody gets traded, there's only one person up there to handle those questions. And we've seen Mike Brown before be very animated in his press conferences, while Tibbs tends to be very subdued, knowing who he works for and kind of how they want their lone voice to represent the organization. Can Mike Brown rein it in? I hope he doesn't as a media member. Like, I want him to be honest and open, but I think the history of Knicks head coaches suggests that once you get in that seat, whether there's a conversation that happens or whatever, they tend to rein it in. So I'm curious to see how he handles that too, where you're the only one talking for an entire organization.
That is the unfair part about all of this for me, is Mike Brown has to take the bullets for James Dolan. He has to take the bullets for Leon Rose. He has to take the bullets for the team construction of a roster that he's not going to have much say in. Like the free agency moves that they've made before they hired him. They're already essentially what the NBA has is a hard cap. And you can't use but so many mechanisms because you have Jalen Brunson on the big boy max, Karl Towns on a real big boy max, Mikal Bridges on big money. Like everybody who's there making big money. And when you fire Tibbs after taking them to the Eastern Conference Finals, I say this to people all the time whenever they bring it up. Why'd they fire Tibbs? They fired Tibbs because they wanted to. They didn't fire Tibbs because Tibbs lost in the Eastern Conference Finals, a place they haven't been in 25 years. They fired Tibbs because they wanted to fire Tibbs. Or James Dolan fired Tibbs because James Dolan wanted to fire Tibbs. And now, for Mike Brown, he's in a spot where only a trip to the finals will do. And that seems so unfair, even with all the changes in the Eastern Conference. James, I don't even know if I look at that roster and I say, oh, yeah, this is a NBA Finals roster. This is the makeup of a team that's going to the NBA Finals. Not the talent, but the makeup. I don't see the makeup of a Finals team.
I mean, yeah, it's certainly like possible, right? Like you could say that there are still some flaws in the roster, but you could also say they were possibly a Halliburton heavens drop shot away from making it to the Finals too, right? So just so many things factor into not just winning a championship, but getting to the Finals that like to put yourself in a corner where it's basically saying, where you basically said it's our coach and we need to do something different with our coach and this will fix everything. Like, okay, the Knicks were relatively healthy last year. That's not like they lost Mitchell Robinson didn't play most of the year, but he was coming off the bench. He was going to come off the bench anyway, and Jalen missed a month. That was really the only injuries they had. They were relatively healthy last year, right? Like, who's to say that happens again? Knock on wood for all those guys. Like, I don't want to wish injury on anybody, but who's to say that happens again, right? Who's to say that a team like the Magic is completely not, like, they were ravished by injury last year? Mm-hmm. Who's to say that there isn't a team that, like, I mean, listen, Boston, you guys, the Knicks coming back from 220-point games, like, who's to say that something like that happens again? There's just so much that comes into goes into making the finals, and like the Knicks could be the beneficiary of that, right? Like maybe they stand healthy again for an entire season, or maybe just a different voice changes things. Like it's possible, but there's just so much beyond like talent that gets a team to the NBA finals. It, when you're saying like, yeah, we're going to fire this coach and only do this major move, and the goal, whoever we hire next, we believe can get us to the finals, is like, you're painting yourself in a corner that you really didn't have to. Like, yeah, I just, you didn't have to do that. Like people, I'm sure the people are obviously upset with that they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals, but they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. You don't say anything. You bring back the same team or whatever. You don't put out the statement that, like, you don't need this. Everybody knows you're trying to win a championship. Your actions show that. You don't, putting it in written words makes it, now people get to dangle that in front of you.
And this is where Mike Brown is in, once again, an unfair situation, because A, you're still paying Tibbs $30 million over the next 3 years. So then it's going to look like, all right, if we're keeping you, if you struggle and we keep you, we're only keeping you because we don't feel like swallowing another $30 million to get rid of you. And that doesn't seem comfortable, right?
Right.
The other fact, like you said, Karl Towns has some bad games, or injuries start to bite you guys because of maybe overuse from the year before. You have to answer for things, of situations that you did not create. Right. And that creates resentment to me, yeah, from the coach to the people he works for, from the coach to the public. And when you are the spokesperson for everybody, you have to be accountable for everything Leon Rose does, accountable for everything James Dolan does. You have to be a certain type of person who is built to stay on message and on brand. And if there's anything that Tibbs was, he stayed on message. He stayed on brand. Very rarely did he deviate from his own messaging. And that wasn't from MSG. That was from himself, right? That's how he kicked it in Minnesota. That's how he kicked it in Chicago. That's that type of dude that he is. You said it yourself. Mike Brown is a different type of dude. I think he has the temperament to coach this team.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I don't know if he has the temperament to deal with all the accountability that he's going to be asked to answer for. And that's where it starts chipping away at the relationship. Like, hey, do we even know if Leon Rose is going to be at this press conference to ask and answer questions?
I would bet a significant amount of money that he would not, because more than 80% of the press conference would be them. I mean, he hasn't talked in 5 years. I doubt they set him next to Mike Brown for the first time when they're hiring a coach and allow people to ask a backlog of questions on top of why'd you fire Tibbs. So I would put a lot of money on the answer being no.
So, and look, the roster changes. You got Jordan Clarkson after a buyout in Utah. You got Gersan Yabusele for, it looks to be more than like the minimum, right?
Yeah, a little less than the taxpayer non-level. So it gave them, I think he went like 40K under or something like that. So now the Knicks get a chance to sign one more vet minimum guy and like a rookie exception guy. If he would have just signed for the whole mid-level, they would only been able to do a rookie exception.
James, assuming that the Knicks are the favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference, there's going to be no Tatum, and the Boston Celtics already started their tear down. No Tyrese Halliburton, they already lost Miles Turner. This is a year that is tailor-made, at least from the summer, for the New York Knicks to be the favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference. In theory, there will be no excuses. Mm-hmm. But we like to play, you know, numbers games and stuff like that, because that's what the people want. People like nice round numbers, or the number three, right? Give me three teams who will be the biggest threat to the New York Knicks making the NBA Finals for the first time since 1999.
Well, you have to say Cleveland. I know the narrative on them has soured.
Yes.
They also lost to a team that was in the finals, right? They look gassed. But I think it's, again, the NBA is about matchups. And I think people should remember that we learned this postseason that the regular season doesn't matter. But the Knicks could not beat the Cleveland Cavaliers last year. The Cavaliers gave them their biggest spanking of the season, I believe, 36 points or something like that. So they had Lonzo Ball. I love that addition. Like, they're pretty much the same team with a couple of fine-tuned, replacing Lonzo Ball with Ty Jerome. Like, I like that upgrade. Orlando, you have to show respect to. They pieced together a weird team last year with all their injuries and still found themselves in the postseason. They made the big move for Desmond Bane. I still think they need more shooting. I'm not the biggest Paolo guy in the world. I think he does things good. I don't think he does anything great. I still like the jumpers, if he had the playmaking. I'm not the biggest Paolo guy, but maybe he takes a leap. Franz has gotten better than I thought he would be, and maybe he's more consistent as a shooter, but they just defend so well, and defense travels to me, and adding Bane is good. Then the third one, you could go a couple different ways, right? Like, Indiana's probably out of it with Halliburton done for the year.
Yeah.
I don't ever really want to, like, I think Giannis is still the best player in the East. Mm-hmm. It's hard to just throw Milwaukee out of the conversation. We're going to learn a lot about Detroit this year. Like, was last year a flash in the pan? Did they just have the perfect synergy? That's why I kind of like that they didn't make any big moves. Like, if I were them, I too would want to find out, like, was last year a real thing?
Yep.
Before I went all in. But they went toe to toe with the Knicks in the first round. And I hate to say this because we say this team every year and it never happens. But I mean, if we're just looking at talent, the 76ers. Like, the 76ers.
You're your own on that one.
I know.
You can live there if you want to.
And I should be. To expect Joel to be healthy for most of a season is not right. You know me, I'm a big Paul George guy, but I'm not. I'm living alone on that island right now. Maxey's a great player. I really like VJ Edgecombe. I'm curious to see what happens with Quentin Grimes. And then they'll get Jared McCain back, who was looking like the runaway rookie of the year before he got hurt. So Orlando, Cleveland, and then I just wouldn't sleep on Milwaukee, Detroit, and Philadelphia as teams that, like, if you
asked you to name three, you name me six.
That's what it says a lot about the East. All right. Detroit, because I saw Detroit go toe-to-toe with the Knicks.
That's where I wanted to sort of drill down with you. I figured you would pick Detroit. I thought it'd be Milwaukee, but
that's what Knicks fans listening to this are saying the same thing, of course.
Yeah. And Knicks fans are Knicks fans, right? They're completely delusional. But Detroit
is the team, not me.
Yeah, I said, oh, yeah, come for me. We on YouTube. I'm not running.
Good.
I ran into a Knicks fan at one of my best friends' 4th of July barbecue. Every day he's wearing a Knicks shirt, running around the house and everything else. And wearing a Knicks shirt with the number 3 on it. I said, was that John Starks missing another 3 in the NBA Finals? My bad. Or that's Josh Hart. Oh, did he play another 50-minute game where he dropped dead at the end of it because he had nothing left? Like, tell me what it is.
You're a fool. I know you're telling the truth, too.
Oh, trust me. Oh, Fred's listening. I'm saying his name. Fred is listening. That's my man. Love him to death. Fred's listening.
Shout out to Fred. Not Fred Katz, but shout out to
Fred. No. Not, that's Matthew. Fred is Matthew. No, but for bringing it back to the Detroit Pistons, Jaden Ivey, I want to see it because there were teams who were calling on him all last season before he got hurt. And the Pistons did not want to let him go because they saw as an athletic complement to Cade Cunningham. And you were seeing him turn the corner. Like, they weren't as good together. Like, they wound up taking off after he got hurt. And I think that had a lot to do with Asar Thompson. That had a lot to do with Dennis Schroeder coming in, getting him at the trade deadline, everything else. But if Jaden Ivey is the athletic sort of change of pace off the ball, can do it on the ball, then that's a wild card.
Yeah.
And I know you're a little mixed on Jaden Ivey, but he's going into this rookie extension year, him and Jalen Duren. Like, there hasn't been any significant, it doesn't seem like, movement with extension talks. And who knows, as we're recording this, they could wind up both re-signing. But I think the Pistons are going to keep their powder dry to maintain some flexibility. But this is big years individually for them. And I think if you believe in the players that you drafted or the players that you inherited, then figuring out, okay, Jalen Duren, let's see what you can do with one more year, you and Isaiah Stewart. Okay, Jaden Ivey, if you're healthy, if you're all the way back from that broken fibula, right? That's fibula, right?
Yeah.
I think it was a fibula. Broken fibula on January 1st, where Cole Anthony just decided to play football with you. Let's see it. Year four, this is where guys, you start to see if guys have really turned the corner. And there's, look, there's no more Malik Beasley for reasons that we don't have to discuss.
Yeah.
Dennis Schroeder's going to Sacramento. Tim Hardaway is going to Denver. So pretty much it is back to the young guys. And yeah, Caris LeVert, Duncan Robinson, but the runway is still going to be there, I think, for the young guys, Rodden Holland, Asar Thompson, Jaden Ivey, to take the mantle. Yeah. Internal development is the answer for the Detroit Pistons in ways that it's not for every other franchise in the East.
Right. No, I agree. And I think that they have an identity. They have a culture. They know how to play. They know how they're going to play. Cade is that dude. And it's just a matter of, and I saw Trajan Langdon talked about the internal development. Mm-hmm. Like, you can make all the trades and signings you want, man, but the best teams that aren't in these major markets, like, it's because you drafted well and they developed well. And that's how you build sustainability. That's how you build a Denver. That's how you build a Toronto. Like, that's how it happens. So I'm fascinated to see how that plays out with them not making any major moves. Can they be a, what would they finish last year? 42 wins or 44 wins or 45 wins? So,
hold on.
I think 44, 45. 44. Yeah. Can they do 43, 46 again without making any major moves? Because then I think that opens the floodgates for next season, next summer for them to really go for it. So we'll see. But yeah, I think the Knicks are going to go in as the favorite, primarily because people have soured on Cleveland. Mm-hmm. But I still think there are two like top five teams in the East, and it's the Knicks and Cleveland. So I don't think it'll be as easy as people are making it out to be. And also, like, I know Boston's doing a gap year, but Jaylen Brown and Derek White,
that's not a bad place to start at.
That's not a bad place to start at, man. They're both really good. Anthony Simons can score. They're going to have to iron out the front court stuff, right? But, like, it's not a terrible team.
No, if you have the infrastructure, and they're still going to take a lot of threes, right? Yeah. They're still going to play the game of math with you, and that is where things can be dangerous. And we're going to find out what Joe Mazzulla as a coach is made of when he doesn't have like the most talented team in the conference by far. And you're coming into a season where the natives are not going to give you the benefit of the doubt just because Jason Tatum is out. They're going to light a fire under your ass from day one, right? Because all that weird stuff that you like, all that's cute when you winning.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear all the weirdness when you're a 500 team. Yeah. Nobody want to hear that. So no, right. let's see how that plays. Now, Orlando's an interesting one to me, a team I did not hear you mention, and I want to know what you think about them before we go to break.
I did mention Orlando.
No, I know you did. You did mention Orlando. I said a team that you didn't mention, and I want to know what you think of them.
I'm sorry.
Is the Atlanta Hawks.
Oh, damn. My bad. Atlanta. Hold on. I spent the last few weeks praising the Atlanta Hawks. I love what Atlanta has done. Do I think they're legit title contenders? Listen, I didn't think that team...
Or legit threats to the Knicks getting to the finals. That doesn't have to be you're going to see them in the conference finals. They can be a threat in the second round or the first round.
No, you're right. I do. Like, I actually think this team's talented than the team that made that magical run to the Eastern Conference Finals a few years ago. The wild card, obviously, is can they figure out what's wrong with Porzingis and can he stay healthy? Because if that's the case, then this team looks a lot different. But even then, like, they still have a Kongwu. They still have guys. But that wing rotation, like, the switching that they're going to be able to do with Jalen Johnson, assuming he's back healthy, Dyson Daniels, one of the best defenders in the league, Richesse, like, he ain't soft. They added somebody else, too, if I'm not mistaken. Who am I missing?
Who you thinking of? Luke Kennard.
And Luke Kennard, right? Like, one of the best shooters in the NBA. Like, that team is nice. Yes, I'm sorry. I forgot to mention Atlanta. I apologize, Atlanta Hawks fans. I am very, very intrigued by this Atlanta team.
It's funny to me. In some ways, it's almost like they took the Knicks model in a way where, okay, we have Jalen Brunson, we have Trae Young. These guys struggle on defense, but are Wizards as offensive players. Complete Wizards in different ways, right?
Like, right.
like Jalen Brunson is a different type of, the perception of Jalen Brunson as a teammate is a different perception than what Trae Young is as a teammate. I'm not saying I believe in her or not. I'm just saying this is what's right. out there, right?
Right.
But you try to protect or insulate him with wings. Like, yep. okay, the switchable wings and everything else where that your point of attack defense isn't as vulnerable all the time. You don't have a Carl Towns that you have to necessarily account for at, you know, at the rim. But that right. wasn't, remember, that was a trade that came right before training camp began. Like, that wasn't remember. Initially. I wonder if you knew you were going to go get Carl Towns, do you go surrender all the draft picks for right. Mikal Bridges a couple months before? I do wonder about that stuff for me.
No, I think that's fair. My hunch would be no. But yeah, I don't. That's a great question that I guess we can never find out because we don't get to ask any questions.
No, we don't get to ask any questions of anybody. Nobody gets to be held accountable. Not in New York, the biggest city in the world. And it's not even Groundhog Day when Leon Rose comes out to play. Unfortunate. But when we come back, there was a big trade that happened right while we were recording. We're going to talk about that coming up on A Good Word. Back on A Good Word here with my man James Edwards from The Athletic. James, a big trade just came down the pike from your former teammate, Shams Charania of ESPN. The Clippers, the Jazz, and the Heat in a three-way deal sends Norman Powell to Miami near All-Star Norman Powell. John Collins goes to Los Angeles. Kevin Love, Kyle Anderson, and a 2027 Clippers second-round pick goes to the Utah Jazz. I will save my Kevin Love going to Utah jokes for another day. But the big part of this for me, Norman Powell, a big-time scorer, going to Miami, a team that was bereft of creativity, shot creation last year, and John Collins, an athletic big man. Like, I don't know why people have soured on him over the past couple of years. Like, he's always been on the trading block. But going to the Clippers, I feel like that is a huge thing. That gives James Harden a lob threat that can yeah. run, that can run the floor, not just Ivica Zubac, but you give him another athletic big, and hopefully that he can wind up fitting into Ty Lue's defensive system. But I feel like they have a higher upside now, the Clippers do, at least from the first, at least at first blush.
No, I agree. I like this move for Miami and the Clippers. As you said, Miami, Norm Powell was one of the best. I mean, honestly, he was one of the best two guards in basketball last year. Like, Norm was really, really good.
Yes, he was.
As you mentioned, Miami was kind of lacking creativity from in terms of scoring. So to add another guy like that who can put it in the basket is good. As you mentioned already, I mean, the Clippers are going for it. As long as Kawhi and Harden are there, you might as well try to piece things around them to give them the best chance to win. And Zubac was really good last year. Was Derrick Jones Jr. a Clipper last year?
I feel like he was.
So, I mean, they have like a more traditional power forward lob threat. And Collins is, I don't remember how he shot from three last year, but he's like, he has the ability to hit threes. And Utah, I just don't, listen, I get giving up Collins, but I feel like they gave up more to get Collins than, like, they tried to get him and be cute and think it would be an investment. And they basically turned it into a decent eighth, ninth man and a second round pick. Like, they kind of backfired on him. If I recall that, they gave up a little bit more to get him. But I mean, at least they're like the league. I know the league had been kind of sour on Collins. I remember there were talks about a few years ago when I was covering the Pistons if they would get him. And yeah, there was just, I think the Jazz held out a little too long on the John Collins asset.
Well, he had the ankle thing. He had the lower back thing. I feel like last year he only played 40 games. But in those 40 games, like, the numbers are really good. 53 from the field, 40 from three, 83 from the line. Like, those are the things that you ask of the new age bigs. Can you protect the rim decently enough? Can you run the floor? Can you shoot threes and spread the floor? And can you rebound? In theory, he does all of those things. It's just a matter of, can it be fit into a winning atmosphere like the Clippers with the expectations, because playing in Utah the past couple years, there were no expectations of right. winning. It was, you were coming there to lose, and you knew you were going there to lose. And you, we brought up, we was funny, we were talking about the Atlanta Hawks from a few years ago, the 21 team that, excuse me, that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. He was a huge reason for yeah. that. John Collins was a yep. huge reason, you know, in that team sort of making that, sort of making that run. And then in the past couple of years, like you said, for whatever reason, the league sours on guys, and you don't really often know why, right?
Yeah.
Like I want to bring up a name, but I it would be unfair of me to bring up said player's name that I feel like they talk about John Collins like he's player X, like he's a like just a knucklehead that does not know how to conform in a team environment. Like that's how you feel like it sort of has gone overboard. And I don't yeah. know if that's necessarily fair. And I do think that if you're the Clippers and you know that you won't have the opportunities to give to Norman Powell if James Harden is healthy and he's always healthy, and if Kawhi Leonard is healthy, which he never is, then you ship him off to a place like Miami where he can get the minutes, the numbers, and the shots that he deserves. I'm just really, really intrigued by what the Clippers can do, what Ty Lue can do in this. We brought Norman Powell. I think he's like 22 a game last year.
Yeah.
Like he should have very well been an All-Star if we knew that LeBron was going to come to All-Star on Sunday afternoon, take pictures with the team, not in uniform, like he was one of the coaches. You know, like I think Norman Powell would have been the next guy up in that, and that would have been a huge get for him. We would be saying All-Star Norman Powell being traded to the Miami Heat. I don't know exactly what the Heat are doing. They always seem like they're trying to operate around the fringes a little bit, but yeah. Norm Powell, Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, that's not bad. And we didn't mention Miami as a credible threat to the New York Knicks. But bringing a guy in like this for the price of Kevin Love and Kyle Anderson, that's not a bad output to go get a guy who can get you 22 to 25 a night.
No, not at all. And from a Clippers perspective, I have no knowledge of this, and I don't even know if it financially makes sense, but I think you're maybe a little willing to move Norm Powell if you think that there's a chance Mr. Real Deal Bradley Beal gets bought out, and that feels like a Clippers guy. Like I love watching Bradley Beal. Like prime Bradley Beal cooking was like as aesthetically pleasing of basketball as you could watch from a player. And he's still a good player. Like people need to chill with all that, but. He doesn't strike me as a guy that would ever want to like play in a big market with like huge expectations. And like, so you get the LA, but you get the Clippers. And I'm saying this as somebody who grew up a Clippers fan, like that's like the perfect situation. You have a chance to win, but it's also still like the B team in the city. Like he feels like a Clippers guy, if that makes sense.
Well, look, he has 2 years left.
With all due respect
left.
To Kawhi and James Harden, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah, no, because they definitely said a Clippers
they
guy.
Chose that.
Yeah, they chose that life, just like you chose the Clippers life. I don't know why, but you
Sean
know.
Livingston, baby, shout out to Sean Livingston.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't this no slander, no slander, no slander.
I'll keep my thoughts for the commercial break. but for Brad Beal, 2 years left on this contract, right?
Yep,
$53 and $57 million. The Phoenix Suns have been trying to trade that man from the day that he got there, right? Yeah. Like legit. And he has a 15% trade kicker, which makes things and a no trade clause. So if he winds up getting bought out and a team can get him for the low of a bet man or something like that, because if he winds up getting bought out, he's going to get the majority of his money and everything else. So all you have to do is just make up the difference as the Clippers will give him a vet minimum deal. You bring him off the bench and you let him feast on second units at his, you know, at his age, he's still just 32. Like he's not an old player, but you let him feast on second units. You revitalize him a little bit by sending him to LA. He doesn't want to leave Phoenix. He probably doesn't want to leave that warm weather. And if he winds up going to either LA, I think you can wind up getting something that's really good. What happens is, and we talked about with John Collins, but even more so with a guy like Brad, players become their contracts more than they become their games at a certain point. And because that Phoenix experiment was a complete disaster, even before Bradley Beal got there, like it was trending bad and then Brad got there and then it got really bad. So there's culpability from him, but you can't put that entire thing on him because once again, new owner syndrome with Matt Ishbia and everything else. Like, yeah, that's what happens with that team. But if you're getting a 32-year-old Brad Beal who's a little bit, you know, rejuvenated and healthy and rested, you might get something from him.
Yeah, like his efficiency numbers were pretty like solid last year, and I always thought like Zach LaVine was a victim of that conversation
mm-hmm,
too. Like,
mm-hmm.
What is he supposed to say? No, I'm not.
Don't pay me the max.
Yeah, like what are we talking? Like Zach LaVine is nice. Like Zach LaVine is a very good NBA player. And yeah, I think I understand like the contract thing. Like to me, the whole Beal thing is like the no trade. Like trading for a guy that has a no trade who's not one of the five best players in the NBA is insane. That's like the issue with me. Like he got paid that money in Washington. The situation there, like they basically had no choice. I mean, they had a choice, but the way that they were run for a long time and have been run, like that was the pretty obvious thing they were going to pay Bradley Beal. So, of course, take your money. If they ask for a no trade, they say, yeah, okay, cool. Like, I can't blame Bradley Beal for wanting to dictate how he wants to live his life.
Right.
Like, if I could get any player in the league would want a no-trade clause if they signed with the team. Like, they want to know that they can set up home and set up shop for a while. So I don't blame Bradley Beal. You could say he doesn't care, like he's not a winning player. And listen, I mean, that might be the case, right? But has Bradley Beal also ever been in a non-toxic environment? No, he's not. So maybe a situation where he's been around guys who have won at a high level will at the very least, he'll want to come through for them. So we'll see. I like Bradley Beal, but I also understand he's never played in a meaningful, serious situation. Yeah.
Right. He played, I think they might have gotten to the second round. I want to say in 2015.
Yeah, they gave Cleveland
against Atlanta,
a run for their
John
money.
Wall breaks his hand. I think they, in 17, I want to say they played Boston in the second round.
I'm thinking Boston or something. Yeah.
And that's when Isaiah Thomas, the 5'9 Isaiah Thomas, was lighting up John Wall for like 53 points in games and stuff like that. Like that Boston Celtics team, the pre-Jason Tatum Celtics. That's almost 10 years ago. Damn.
It's crazy, bro.
Damn, we old. All right. Now, the other part of this, another member of the former member of the Phoenix Suns, once removed from all of that, DeAndre Ayton was bought out by the Portland Trailblazers. And he wound up going to the Lakers to play with LeBron and Luka. He's going to be their starting center. The Lakers have already said it. He's going to be the starting center. He's another guy who numbers show, man, 16 and 10. And perception is, oh, I'm unprofessional, bad teammate, immature, blah, blah, blah. I think there's still plenty of talent there. I'm very curious if that talent can manifest itself in L.A., playing with LeBron and playing with Luka and playing under J.J. Redick. A few years ago, I thought DeAndre Ayton was like the fourth best center in the league. Like, I legit stood on that. I don't know if I voted for him on all NBA in 22 and they won like 63 games or whatever it was. But he was definitely for me in that conversation. And a lot of things have gone downhill since then, both for him and certainly for the franchises that he's played on. But do we think that he's going to mesh with LeBron and with Luka Doncic?
I mean, I think so. Ayton's another one of those guys that I'm not the biggest Ayton fan, but I don't think he's as bad as kind of the narrative around him is. But yeah, I mean, when you go into an environment where I think one thing that's missed in sports, but we're talking NBA specifically, is like when you go to a place with a hierarchy, like, those guys like the Bradley Beals and the DeAndre Aytons of the world, like I tend to believe you like get the best out of them. Like there is no doubt that LeBron and Luka are there. Like they can yell at him, they can do what they want to do. Like they can make sure he's setting those screens hard. He's gonna make sure he's playing defense. Like this isn't a situation where it's Phoenix where he was the number one pick. Like what are you gonna tell me? Or Portland where he's playing with a bunch of young guys, right? Like this is like people's legacies are on the line here. You might be playing your last, this might be LeBron's last year and you're playing with him. Like, I think guys, when there's a clear cut hierarchy, you can maybe see some guys hone into what they're supposed to do and what the team needs them to do. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt as another guy who's been in weird situations. Like you said, they did do well in Phoenix, but in that situation, he was the number one pick. He was one of the franchise players. So I'll be fast. I think it's a good low risk move for the Lakers. Like, they got a C plus B minus center for basically nothing, and they needed one, and they weren't going to be able to get one as good as Ayton without the way that they got him. So I'm not mad at it. I like the move for the Lakers.
Look, last thing, because we're talking about Brad and we're talking about DeAndre Ayton, I think this kind of applies, is the hold your nose max. I think those days are over. Oh, man, we got to give this guy a max just because. Right. I think those days are kind of over. Because Bradley Beal in Washington was he's the one guy that we got, especially after John Wall wound up, you know, getting hurt back-to-back.
Yep.
And back-to-back years. While recovering from one injury, he had another one. You're like, okay, Brad, you are our franchise guy. We have to pay you. Otherwise, we don't have a franchise. And therefore, we got to give you your no trade. We got to give you your 15% trade kicker. I don't think with the new collective bargaining agreement, teams are going to do that anymore. Like, right. If you're signing a guy to a max, you're going to be fully believing that this guy is a max type of player who can drive winning, not just influence winning, but drive winning. And I think this is sort of this CBA wasn't grandfathered in.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, year by year, we're going to add more. It was literally from the day that the CBA came in, first apron, second apron, everybody adjust and deal with it. And I think we're seeing teams make more financial decisions than basketball decisions. And I think that's why, you know, we're seeing some of the discussions that we're seeing across the board. But James, when we come back, an all-time point guard is about to call it quits. I'm going to ask him where Chris Paul ranks on his all-time list. Time for the last word. Here's my man, James. That was of The Athletic. James, with long-awaited news has come out. Chris Paul's retiring next year. He told that to your fellow Spartan, Jamel Hill, recently. Said next year, at the worst, is going to be his last year. He spent last year in San Antonio. The year before that, he was in Golden State after being traded from Phoenix in that Washington, you know, that whole Jordan Poole trade, which felt like 5 years ago now. It's only been 2 years since then. But Chris Paul has this great talent of making sure that he can turn around your program. If you got a bad program and Chris Paul shows up, he's going to get you to 45-46 wins. Like, that's what he did in Oklahoma City that 1 year, and sort of helped propel Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, one of your favorite players, to the MVP status that he wound up getting to. But just in general, Chris Paul has only been to the NBA Finals once. And I think he led the league in assists 5 times, led the league in steals 6 times. Where do we rank him as far as all-time point guards?
Well, he's at least at the best 4th. There's Steph, Magic, and Isaiah. And I said that how I said that, Vinny.
Oh, you said that in the order that you meant it in?
I said that how I said that. Then there's Sean Livingston at 4. All right. Seriously. So we have to factor in Chris's longevity.
Do we?
In playing, I'm also going to take away stuff. 1 second.
Okay.
Factor in his longevity. Is it 21 years of playing great to good basketball?
Mm-hmm.
We have to factor in, like you said, like his win-loss record has to be crazy. Like, especially when you can. I would love to know how many teams has he played for? Franchises? Is it 5?
New Orleans.
Clippers.
Houston. Phoenix. Golden State. Spurs.
I forgot about Golden State.
OKC. So 7.
I would love to know if what player has played for at least 7 teams and has like the win percentage he does. Like like you said, everywhere he goes, he wins. It's probably not as high as I think. We're going off the cuff. But never won. Never really got close. Like, there was a Western Conference Finals in there, but like that was second round exit Paul for a long time. I have to put Steve Nash ahead of him.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I probably I probably have to put him below Jason Kidd too, and Oscar Robertson, for including Oscar Robertson as a point guard.
Do you
guard.
Put him above John Stockton? Because I feel like that is the people say that Chris Paul and Isaiah are the comps. No, it's Chris Paul and John Stockton are the comps. His game is far more John Stockton than Isaiah Thomas. Far more. If you watch them play.
Did Chris, I guess, yeah, he played with Harden. I was going to say, so was he Harden's teammate when Harden won MVPs?
He was Harden's teammate in 2018.
How many MVPs did Malone win? One or two?
Karl Malone won two. He was awarded MVP. He shouldn't have won any of them, to be perfectly honest.
Right, right.
But yeah, he won two in 97 and 99. Harden won MVP in 18 and probably should have won in 17 too.
Okay, but then I forget, like, Chris played with some, he played with Blake. He's played with Hall of Famers.
Yes.
Like, in their prime.
Yes.
Woo!
Do you put him above John Stockton? That's the question.
Ah, man, that's tough. I'm going to go, no. I got it. How many times did the Jazz make the finals? Twice?
Twice. This one. Yeah, just twice, 97 and 98.
I got to go with Stockton. Like you said, very similar in terms of the comp, but especially
he's in the tier. Like,
yeah, like it's like 5A, 5B or 7A, 7B for me with those two.
Yeah, the Chris Paul thing for me is that I think we kind of forget is, and this is where I would give Chris Paul a load of credit, right? Chris Paul is actually a big-time scorer who was a blur of a player until he got that knee injury. And I want to say the knee injury happened like year five in New Orleans, and he missed like a considerable amount of time. And he was like dunking on dudes. Like, when he dunked on Dwight Howard, like, Chris Paul had hops and a lot more athleticism and bounce, and then the knee injury sort of took it away. Then he wound up retrofitting his game.
Yep.
I wonder if the Chris Paul story looks different if the Basketball Reasons trade actually happens. If instead of going to the Clippers in 2011, he goes to the Lakers and plays with Kobe Bryant. I don't know if that Lakers team actually wins anything. I think that's this big, you know, the big misnomer is like, man, if Chris Paul goes to the Lakers win. I'm not sure if that actually happens, but maybe him playing for that particular organization and playing, you know, in LA with those expectations, maybe we look at him differently.
I think the best
of Chris Paul is some of the best point guard play we've ever seen. Period, point blank. On both ends of the floor, he was a pit bull. I want to say he made the all-defensive team six times, like a legit six times where he wasn't the mark. But there always seemed to be like there was a level, for me, with Magic Johnson. Magic is my point guard of point guards.
Yeah.
Zeke is my number two. Steph is my number three. I know, James, roll your eyes. I don't care.
But the tier
is Magic is at the top, and then Zeke and Steph are right there. And then the third tier is the Steve Nashes and the Stocktons. And if you call Oscar, then a level below that, it's the Tim Hardaways, the Gary Paytons, like those type of guys, right? Yeah. And I'm sure I'm missing guys, but you guys understand what I'm saying. No disrespect to anybody.
No disrespect to Pistol Pete.
Right. No, I think he's a two. But,
oh, all right. Well.
But the thing with Magic and Isaiah and Steph is that I could go to them before the game and say, I need 40. I need you. I'm Pat Riley. I'm Steve Kerr. I'm Chuck Daly. I need 40 from you tonight. Not that you accidentally wind up with 40, like you just find yourself having a ninth, but you're able to take over the game from the start of the game, and this is the way that you're going to go win this game. You're not going to win this game by distributing. You're going to carry this team on your back and give me this win tonight. It's only a handful of point guards who can do that, and it's not reflected on the Basketball Reference page.
Yeah. No, that's,
you know,
fair.
What I mean? That's the difference to me between Chris Paul and those other guys, because Chris Paul's so not narrow-minded, James, but he wanted to play perfect basketball.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I keep
for
my
sure.
assist to turnover ratio down. I'm not going to throw dangerous passes and everything else. Not that he wasn't a great passer, because he was a great passer, but he wasn't taking chances. So you don't keep the defense off guard as much.
Yeah,
the defense knew what they were going to get out of you.
Agreed. Another thing I'll ask with Chris, and I'm not saying this that there's a right or wrong answer. I'm just generally asking. It might be too detailed for us to just be going off the cuff and talking about it, but how many years in Chris Paul's career was he for sure the best point guard in the NBA?
That's a great question.
Because I'm biased here as a Midwesterner, Big Ten guy, and team light skin. Like, I was team Deron Williams early on when it was him and Chris Paul. I don't know. Again, I was in middle school, early high school then. So, like, that was just me.
Deron Williams was never better, but he had better games. Like, he owned the matchup a lot of times, but I don't think he was better over the course of, like, an 82-game sample size type of game.
And Chris's career is obviously way better. Like, I'm not comparing them to the pantheon of point guards, but I want to go back through and just, like, think about how many times was Chris actually what I have said he's the best point guard in the NBA in each of his 21 whatever seasons.
Maybe there was like a 3 or 4 year stretch.
Yeah. But it's the consistency, right? He was always 1, 2, or 3 for 21 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Because honestly, the weirdest thing is you could only say that maybe Isaiah was better than Magic for a couple of years. Because Magic a lot of times he was playing two guard with Norm Nixon before he switched over to play point guard, I want to say in 83, 84, like that sort of thing. But Isaiah's the second best point guard of all time. It just happens to coincide with him playing with the greatest point guard of all time during the same, you know, period of time. And so maybe there was a couple of years of overlap where Zeke had a better year than Magic, where I think 1 year he averaged 21 and 14.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here, y'all? Like, what is anybody who's not putting Zeke where they need to put Zeke or whatever, that's their own thing. But that's why I don't think, for people who want to say, hey, Allen Iverson was never a point guard and Kyrie Irving is as great as he is, he was never able to win a game in multiple ways. Like, Kyrie's spectacular, but when people say Kyrie Irving is like a top 10 point guard of all time, I need y'all to watch more basketball. This is from somebody who loves Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Loves Kyrie Irving. And maybe Luka Doncic winds up making this list at some point too, because he actually does play point guard. But the last thing about Chris Paul, is this type of point guard going to be legislated out of the league? Because I don't know if you saw this, but when KD and LeBron had their mind the game conversation, they talked about smallish point guards being picked on all the time and you're not being able to find a placement of just because defensively all you're going to do is pick, pick, pick. Chris Paul is a 6 foot point guard and a 6'6" bulldog. Can Chris Paul, a 19-year-old Chris Paul, come into today's league and dominate the way that he did in 2005?
That's a great question. I'm gonna say he's such a great player that he would figure it out, that he's one of one. But I understand exactly what they were talking about on that podcast, and I tend to agree. Like, who's the best small player in the NBA right now?
Today?
Jalen, right?
By small, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Jalen Brunson, yes.
Can we name anybody else even close? Like, this again, off the top of my head, I'm like 6'2 and under, and I think they have Jalen listed at 6'1. I think that's generous.
Donovan Mitchell?
Donovan, but isn't he like technically, what do they have him at, 6'2 or 6'4?
No, 6'2, he's
right.
He ain't. That man is more 6'1 and 3/4 with bounce.
That's fair. And Garland is another one.
Right. I'm sure Ja Morant is what, 6'2?
Yeah.
Right?
So there's still some small ones out there, but nobody we named is anywhere close to the defender that Chris was. And I think that's part of the bigger point too.
Do you consider Trae Young in this conversation?
I'm with the rest of the basketball world. This year is like, I'm going to have my opinion, my actual final opinion on Trae Young this year. He has a team tailor-made to him. Let's see what it looks like.
Yeah, no, this year is going to be a make or break year for a whole bunch of guys. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing you, my man, at Summer League in Vegas.
Yes, sir.
The most wonderful place on earth if you're a degenerate. I appreciate you, my man. I'll see you out there, bro.
Yes, sir. Anytime, bro.
That is James Edwards from The Athletic. He writes great stuff over there covering the Knicks and the NBA at large. Go and check him out. I think you guys will hear from me next week at Summer League or later on this week. We'll figure all that out. But for the next episode of Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.